So it's Sunday night, and it's time for the increasingly inappropriately named Tuesday night shiur. Now, when I was a kid, my parents always told me that Judaism is not a religion of superstition. And I believed them, because they were my parents. But I was kind of questioning that recently, when there was a court case involving a Jewish resident of the Old City and a, I think, Greek Orthodox monk or whatever, who apparently the minhag in certain circles is to spit every time you see a clergyman of a different religion, and this Greek Orthodox guy had enough and punched the guy in the face. So apparently we are superstitious to a certain extent. There are certain superstitions that we do, and I'd like to look at one specific kind of superstition, which is looking at omens or portends or signs. When may we halakhically rely on signs and when may we not rely halakhically on signs? And the answer, it turns out, depends on where you live, at least in the medieval period, I think. So, of course, any shiur on superstition has to start with Stevie Wonder, but I'm not going to sing that. One thing I'll do with Parsha. So in this week's Parsha, this coming week's Parsha, Chaya Sarah, Sarah dies, and then Abraham wants to find a shidduch for his son Yitzchak, and for various reasons he decides to send Eliezer, his servant, to find the shidduch for Yitzchak. And Eliezer goes to the place where you go to find shidduchim, which is of course the well, and waits there for something to happen. Now he gets there, and he says the following. Yonit.
And he, Eliezer, said, "Eternal, the God of my master Abraham, please cause it to happen before me today, and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of the people of the city are coming up to draw water. So let it come to pass that the young woman to whom I will say, 'Please pour your pitcher, so that I may drink,' and she shall say, 'Drink, and I will give you camels also to drink,' she is the one who you have appointed for your servant Yitzchak, and in this way I will know that you have showed kindness to my master."
Well read. So Eliezer gets to the well and he says, "Okay, God, give me a sign so I know which is the right wife for Yitzchak." And then he finds Rivka and she takes him home, and he tells her the whole story again, and the Gemara says that we see from this that even the conversation of the servants of the patriarchs are more valuable than the mitzvahs, which are hardly written at all, some of them in the Torah. So he says over the same story again. He says, "I came and I had made a sign," and so there must be some message, or perhaps there's some meaning to the fact that he used a sign. And I suppose my assumption would be that if it was Asa to do, he wouldn't have done it. If you stand there and you say, "God, I want something, show me, I don't know which one to choose, give me a sign so I know which one to choose." I assume that he was doing something that was permitted, because he was, grew up in Abraham, he wasn't Jewish. There is an opinion, Rav Yossi's opinion in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that says that even a Ben Noach is forbidden to do the divining or look for omens and things. So if this was forbidden, he wouldn't have done it. And furthermore, if he was doing the wrong thing, God wouldn't have helped him and given him the right wife for Yitzchak.
Right.
I mean, neither of those are... Sorry.
But he wasn't really asking for a sign. Like, he wasn't saying it's the next woman who comes up in a red dress. Like, it was something that was kind of connected to...
Good. Okay. So I agree with you, and strangely enough, that is the run, but that's not necessary. You shouldn't have to say that from the story. I mean, he seems to just be saying, whoever does the following and says the following words will be the right woman. So you want to say he wasn't looking for a sign; he was looking for me.
Because then he could have said, "Whoever comes and shows kindness."
Yeah, or he could have, you know, done what most people do and make a test and hand it out and see who gets the right scores and go and interview their parents and their primary school teachers and all those other kinds of things. But it's a good point, and we'll come back to that. I take that point. Now, on the other hand, you're going to tell me there's a Gemara in Tainit, aren't you, Lee? That seems that we can't necessarily learn from, because he didn't seem to do the right thing. What does it say?
Well, Rabbi Yonatan said, "Three people asked inappropriately. Two were answered appropriately, and one was answered inappropriately. They are Eliezer, Abraham's servant, Shaul ben Kish, and Yitzchak HaGiladi. Eliezer, Abraham's servant, said, "The young woman to whom I will say, 'Pour your pitcher,' she could have been lame or blind, yet he was answered appropriately, and Rivka came along."
Right. Then Shaul, what did he do? Shaul, king of Israel.
What was the quick one was inappropriate? I don't know what the inappropriate answer was.
He said, "Whoever kills Goliath can marry my daughter." And it could mean any bloke could have walked up, and it didn't even display. They'd be Jewish, could have been anyone come along, and he got stubborn enough for a son-in-law. And Yiftach was answered inappropriately. He came back from battle and he said, "Whatever comes out of my house first will be a sacrifice," and he was expecting to be a sheep, and it was a daughter instead.
But aren't those vows more as opposed to superstition?
In the case of Yiftach, the Gemara says why... Well, this is not superstition, I agree.
Right, okay.
In the case of Yiftach, the Gemara says, why didn't he annul his vow? And Pinchas, you're right. All I'm saying is that we can't necessarily say that Eliezer did the right thing, because the Gemara here seems to be criticizing him for acting inappropriately. On the other hand, it doesn't say that the problem was that he asked God to give him a sign. That's not... That's what?
The problem is
he should have specified. Whoever comes out first who's got both legs and both eyes and can, like, whatever.
Why is the problem supposed to...
When you look for a shidduch, you need a list of what you're looking for, obviously.
Right.
So he just said whatever it is, and...
So you're saying he didn't specify it enough?
Yeah.
It's okay that he had a superstition. It needed to be more specific.
That's
not really a superstition.
You want to say this is saying that he shouldn't have done this whole trick altogether. Could be. No. I accept that. What do we call this prohibition of asking for signs? Okay, well, if you look in source number 3, a strangely juxtaposed verse, I'll read it because it's short. It says, "Lo tachlu al adam, don't eat on the blood," and there's about 7 different mitzvahs that refers to. There's a loy t'nachashu, v'loy t'onenu. Nichush means to try and guess what's going to happen in the future using signs and omens. And me'onen is basically the same thing. There's distinctions, but basically they're both trying to tell the future. So we call this nichush. Now, there's a gemara in Chulin, which starts off talking about something entirely different, and then comes back to our parsha and the concept of superstition and omen.
Sorry, can I ask you something quick? Connected. Did that come from like spilling seed and trying to kill Tonanu Leonin?
No,
because that could also be foreseeing your own future.
It's
is it?
I think so.
Okay. Because that could also be like creating your own future for yourself.
I hear.
That's interesting. Okay, go on. Sorry.
I hear. Yes. Interesting. I'm sure there's some good Hasidic Torah on that, but... but we're going to learn a Gemara
reaching now. Reaching fire, yeah, go on.
The Gemara in Chulin is talking about halakha, which says as follows. If you have a piece of kosher meat, and nobody's watching it, it becomes trace meat. Right? The rabbinic prohibition of basa and shenital and bina'ayin, a meat which was not watched, unless it has some kind of recognizable sign on it, it's cut in a special shape, or it's got a heksha on top of it, or it's sealed in a special way, some kind of thing so you know it's your meat, because otherwise, just if you take your eyes off, you don't know whether someone switched your meat with another piece of meat, or whether the crows have come and taken your meat and taken another bit. So halakha, basash nesalim in the iron is afa. You can question if you want, but it won't help you. So the following story, I'm going to read it in the Aramaic, and you can follow along with me. Rav Havikaza lebei Rav Chanan chatnei. Rav was the Rosh Hashanah, the greatest rabbi in Bavel, in the first generation of Amoraim, contemporary of Shmuel and contemporary of Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael, and he was a student of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So he's a seriously important person, and a large part of the Gemara and the Halakha comes from Rav. So Rav was going to his son-in-law's house, Rav Chanan. Chazi mavadikati l'ape. Now he got to the river and he saw the ferry was coming towards him. Normally you get to the thing and you ring the bell or you use your telephone and you call up and you wait until the ferry comes. He saw the ferry was almost there as he got there. Perfect timing. So Amar mavadikati l'ape yamatava legav. The ferry's coming. That means it's going to be a good day. There's going to be something exciting happening when I get to where I'm going. It's an omen that something good's going to happen. Azul kam abava, so he got to where he was going, to Rav Chanan's house, and he stood at the doorway. Udik beviz ah tadasha. He looked through a crack in the door. Chavi chiyuta talya. And he saw there was meat hanging up there, ready, getting ready, because it was going to be a chasna that night. So in fact, his omen came true. It was going to be a good day. There was a wedding coming. So he saw there was meat hanging up. Now, Tarak with Baba, he knocked on the door with a rat-a-tat-tat. Nafuk atu kule alma la'ape. And they opened the door, and everyone came out to greet him, because here comes Rav, very exciting. See, they got the door. Everyone came out to greet him. Atu tauchi nami. And the butchers, who were supposed to be watching the meat, also came out to see Rav, who is this great rabbi who just come to town. There's a problem. So, lo alim Rav eini mine. So Rav, while everyone was surrounding him, whatever, keep his eye on the meat the whole time to make sure it would stay kosher. And he said, Amar lehu, he said, Iku hashta, sefijilu isura levei barat. Now, if I wouldn't have been here, you would have served trace meat to my daughter's children. Because no one was watching the meat, and you would have served this meat at the wedding, and it would be non-kosher. It's a good thing I was here. Of course, if he hadn't been there, they would be watching the meat anyway, not running out to meet him. But the point is that he was saying that he kept an eye on the meat when nobody else did. But notwithstanding that, lo achal rav mahu bisra. He came to the chasna, and he didn't eat the meat. Now, nowadays, we kind of expect rabbis not to eat the meat. But back then, that was a big deal, and the Gemara wants to know why he's not eating the meat. In my time, why didn't he eat the meat? If it's because no one is watching the meat, that's not true, because ha la ilim. He kept his eye on it, so there was someone watching the whole time. I say, Ela de Nachish. Maybe he didn't eat the meat because he knew about the meat because he had an omen that the fairy came, and he didn't want to rely on an omen, so he didn't eat the meat. Now, I'm not quite sure. I haven't figured out how not eating the meat undoes relying on the omen in the first place, but I think I was saying maybe something to do with this sign that he saw. He didn't want to eat the meat because he predicted it would happen based on the fairy coming to greet him. But that's not true either, because Vaha Amar Rav, Rav himself said, Kol Nachash, She'ena Ke'eliezer Eved Avraham, O Ke'yonatan Ben Sha'ul, Eno Nachash. I'm going to translate this like almost everybody. Any divination which is not like that of Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, or like Yonatan Ben Sha'ul, is not considered nachash. Meaning, we'll see other people learning more differently, but it seems to say, the simple meaning is that Rav is saying that relying on fairies is not a problem. It's only what Eliezer did that's a problem, and what Yonatan Ben Sha'ul did, which we'll see soon, that's a problem, but relying on fairies is not a problem. I don't mean fairies, I mean fairies, I mean your accent. So why didn't he eat the meat? And we'll come back to this thing. Ela sudas harashut havai. It was a sudas rishut. What's a sudas rishut? Well, a sudas mitzvah is when a Talmud Chacham gets married to a daughter of a Talmud Chacham. A sudas rishut is when the daughter of a Talmud Chacham gets married to somebody who's not a Talmud Chacham. So he didn't want to, Rav Mitani mitzudas rishut. He didn't want to have anything to do with a chasna, a shidduch, when it was between the daughter of a Talmud Chacham and someone who was not a Talmud Chacham, so he didn't. It didn't eat from the meat. So we see from here, it would seem, that what Eliezer did is called divination and seems to be forbidden. Right? And what Rav did was not considered divination, therefore it's permitted. You agree with me that's the reading of the Gemara?
Okay.
No? Yes? You don't have to. What?
What's the difference?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a good question. So it just helps to make the problem even worse. Make it even
worse. But the reason he didn't have the meat wasn't because of divination, it was just because you're saying...
He didn't like the shidduch.
He didn't like the shidduch.
Right. But the divination that he did was permitted, according to his own opinion. And the Gemara says more than that, Rav Badik B'Mavra, Rav used to check, used to tell the future by whether the fairy was coming or not. Shmuel Badik B'Safra, Shmuel used to tell the future by opening a book, and whatever it said on the page he opened on would be meaningful, and he'd know what was going to happen. Actually, everything I'm saying is going to be understood differently by different Rishonim, but anyway. And Rav Yochanan Barik B'Yanuka, Rav Yochanan used to ask a child what pasuk he was learning. He'd go to school, and he'd say, what are you up to? And he'd say something, and that would have meaning, and he'd understand something based on that. So here's a kind of an interesting story, talking about the early days in Babel, when Rav and Shmuel were in Babel, and Rabbi Yochanan was in Eretz Yisrael. And I find it interesting, anyway, historical story. Kulhu Shani de Rav, the whole, as long as Rav was alive and living in Bavel, right, Rabbi Yochanan and Rav had learned together with Rabbi Yehuda. Nasi ben Rav went to Bavel, Shmuel was a Babylonian, so Rabbi Yochanan didn't know him personally. So as long as Rav was alive, Havakasav lei Rabbi Yochanan, whenever Rabbi Yochanan would write a letter to Bavel, he would say, Dikadam Rabbeinu Shiba Bavel, my dear rabbis in Bavel. Vikinach Nafshe, but when Rav passed away, right, so now Shmuel became the gadol hador in Bavel. Havakasav the Shmuel, he would write a letter to Shmuel, he would say, Likadam Chavereinu Shiba Bavel, my dear colleagues. He didn't want to call him a rabbi because he didn't like. So Shmuel didn't like this very much. Amar Shmuel said, Lo yada li midi de rabbi ana. He doesn't know that I, in certain areas, am greater than he is. So he wants to show off that he really deserves to be called a rabbi also. Kasav, Nishadu le Ibura de Shitin Shani. So Shmuel worked out the calendar for the next 60 years. Right, all the Rosh Chodesh and all the how long the moon cycle is going to be and how long the year is, and which is quite a good trick if you haven't got a computer. And Shmuel was an expert in astrology. So he wrote out this whole calendar and sent it to Rabbi Yochanan to try and impress him. But Amar Rabbi Yochanan said, Hashta Chushpana Ba'amiyada. Okay, he's a mathematician. He knows how to do calculations, but that doesn't qualify him to be a rabbi. So Kasav Shadalei Tleisa Gemale Safki Trefta. It's not clear what the correct use is, whether it should be camels or something else, but he sent him truckloads of Piske Halacha on Trefus, on the Safik Trefa, on this end, kosher not. Amar, so then Rabbi Yochanan said, oh, easily Rabbi Bavel. I see I have got a rabbi in Bavel. He is worthy, and in that case, Ezel Ichazaya should come and visit him, because I'd like to meet this rabbi. So Amalei Leonuka, he went to the nearest school and he pulled a kid out of class and he said, Psukli Psukech, what pasuk are you learning today? What verse are you learning today in school? Amalei, the kid said, Vishmol met. Pasuk in Shmol. Shmol's dead. Rabbi Yochanan said, Shmolina nach nafshe de Shmol. Must be that Shmol's dead. So in that case, no point in me going. He cancelled his train ticket, he unpacked the suitcase and he stayed at home. The Gemara says, by the way, Velahi, in fact, he wasn't dead at all. Lo shachiv Shmol. God didn't want Rabbi Yochanan to have to schlep all the way to Bavel. He wanted him to stay at home, so he gave him the wrong advice through this kid, so that he would do. So, okay. So that, I find that interesting historically, the relationship between the three of them. But also we see, apparently, not only did they rely on these owners, I mean, Rabbi Yochanan seems to be making a fairly major decision based on something which is not exactly whatever. And then the Gemara finishes off with Tanya, Rabbi Shimon finishes off the topic. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Bayit Tinok V'isha. If you buy a new house, and then you see after you've bought your house, everything starts going really well for you. Or you have a new child, or you marry a wife, and you see things start going really well. So Avo Bishen Nachash, even though this is not called divination, Yesh Siman, but it is a good sign, and you should make the most of the opportunity things are going well, so make some good investments. Amr Belasa, Vahud is Chazik Tlata Zimni. This is only if it's been tested three times. So there are three things that have happened consecutively that have been very good. And what's the proof text? Dechtiv, Yaakov says to his sons, when they, Yosef has been sold in Egypt, Shimon has been taken captive, Yehuda comes back, wants to take Binyamin down to Egypt. So Yaakov says, Yosef Einenu, Yosef's not, he's gone, Shimon Einenu, Shimon's gone. Ve'et Binyamin tikachu, if you take Binyamin as well, then it says, you will all be gone from me. So they want to learn from this, that if three kids consecutively would go, then that he's finished. There's a chazaka now that he's going to lose all those kids. So therefore, three times is a reliable sign. So I find that a very peculiar Gemara. Indeed. So what we do see, apparently, is that Shmuel... No, try again. But Eliezer did the wrong thing. This is what Rav says, you're not allowed to do what Eliezer did and what Yonatan did. What did Yonatan do? Let's just turn to source number 5. Would you like to read number?
Yeah, Eden.
Thank you.
Actually, was
that in
your class?
I know your
face. I've been in a cell class. Then said Yonatan, behold, we will pass over unto the men, and we will disclose ourselves unto them. If they say thus unto us, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place. will not go up onto them. But if they can, if they say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up. For the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and we shall be the sign unto us.
You may have noticed it's not my translation. What's happening is a battle going on between the Jews and the Philistines, the Philistines. And Shaul's in a bit of a quandary, doesn't know what to do. And Yonatan and his arms bearer go towards the Philistine camp. And basically, they're hiding a little hole there looking what's going on. And Yonatan says, what we'll do is we'll stand up and go boo. And if they say, wait, we're going to get you, then we'll hightail it and we'll run away. If they say, oh no, the Jews are coming, then we're going to charge them and we'll be successful. And he's going to base his military decisions based on the sign of what the Philistine sentry is going to say. And so he goes, boom, and he goes, oh no, the Jews are coming. So they chase them and they win the battle and everyone is happy ever after. Well, except the people get killed. But
is that more of a reaction, though? It's more reactionary than a sign of...
He says to the guy, he says to his bloke, his lad, he says, listen, here's the sign. If he says this, we'll do this. If he says that, we'll do something else.
Isn't that called strategizing? Not really. If I were to go to someone's house and let's say I was going to someone's house and have a place for Shabbat, show up at their door, and if I could see by their reaction that they were welcoming me in, I'd ask them if I could stay for Shabbat meal. If I could see by their reaction they were tired, then I wouldn't ask.
You guys are thinking the same way as the run, and I like it, but. Perhaps the difference would be, he says here a very specific thing, if this thing happens, you know, doesn't seem to be, he gets there and says, oops, I've overstayed my welcome, I better go now.
Right.
He says, if they say this, we'll do that, and if he says that, we'll do that. I accept your answer.
Okay.
I accept your answer. The Gemara says at any rate, the Gemara seems to say that what Eliezer did is wrong, what Yonatan did is wrong, and what Rav Shmuel Rav Yochanan did is permissible. Right. Now, how is that? So we're going to see four different approaches as to what's permitted and what's forbidden. And they work out basically geographically, which I find interesting. Tosfot and Rashi are the Ashkenazim in this team. Tosfot, as you know, is a group of rabbis founded by Rashi's grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So Tosfot asks the obvious question. Yeah.
Like Eliezer, Abraham's servant, if you would ask, how could Eliezer himself practice divination, it can answer that he did not give her the bracelets until she told him whose daughter she was.
In other words, he didn't really rely on the sign.
Right.
He made a sign, and he saw it coming true, but that was just like a preliminary background check, and then he met her, and he said, who are you, and what's going on, and then he found she was, in fact, the right person, so he could then give her the bracelets and allow her to marry Yitzchak. So he wasn't relying completely on the sign that he made.
So what was the point of saying it in the first place? It was a clue.
Well,
what's the point of including us in his forethought? What was the point? If that wasn't the sign, if that was an all-be-all, and he had to confirm the credentials of this woman, and why say it wrong?
Well, there were hundreds of women coming up to the well. He had to know which is the one.
Well, wasn't he sort of the half of the thing? He's worried about the family that she comes from. Wasn't he sort of the family that he's looking for?
Right.
So he wanted God to help him. Tosfot is saying that if you would ask God for a sign and rely on that sign, that would be forbidden. That's like Eliezer, like Yonatan.
But isn't it more heretical to check it? Logically speaking, if you're saying, God, give me a sign, you're like, well, it's like the guy in the sea, right? Saying, God's going to save me, and the helicopter goes by, and he says, no, I don't need your help, God's going to save me, and the Coast Guard comes by, and so you guys know all of his jokes, and then at the end he drowns, So that's the same idea.
I gave you the sign, why'd you ask me more questions?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, but I also understand Tosfot. I do understand what you're saying, but if the problem is relying on a sign, if it's forbidden to rely on signs, then it makes sense that Eliezer did not rely on the sign. He used that as a half a clue of what he was supposed to be doing, but then he went and did his ask the proper questions afterwards before making any actual final decision. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I take your point.
No, I'm wondering out loud. I don't know.
I take your point, but, and in fact, I think we'll see a different approach, which is similar to that.
Is there a difference between something like Eliezer, when you ask them for a specific answer to a specific question versus something that's just generally a good omen because you want something good to happen? Is there, the one's like a specific request and one is a superstitious act. Let's say like checking Mrs. Ott or something, is that coming up?
I'm not going to bring up Mrs. Ott.
Okay.
No,
that's like
superstition.
Maybe that's not a superstition thing. I don't know, but it is. Okay, so that's a very general thing. Let's check in with the good bad things are happening. I don't know.
I would like to say like you, but the Gemara seems to say the opposite. The Gemara seems to say that what Eliezer did was a problem, and what Rav did, which is, oh, it's going to be a good day, the bus came, that seems to be permitted.
Okay.
But the more general seems to be okay, and the more specific seems to be a problem. It seems to be, although nothing is as it seems.
Right.
We're going to turn everything upside down soon. But
I thought the criticism of Eliezer's looking for a sign that it wasn't specific enough.
So that's the Gemara in Tidy says he asked an inappropriate question. He asked for something non-specific from God. But the criticism of him is that he was asking for a sign. The Gemara Chulin, if we forget about the Gemara Tidy, Gemara Chulin's criticism is that he was doing Nichosh, he was relying on an omen to decide who Yitzchak should marry. Tosfos said he didn't rely on the sign, he used it, but then he relied on asking the questions and checking it out himself. That's the answer.
Well, just like in the Chulin, Rav is like, he's saying, I think, Rav is saying, like, not that, I don't know, that relying on the fairy is not considered divination at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, like, different in the, in the sense, like, it could be called something else, which is not okay, but it's just not divination. Or it could be that, like, he's not saying, if I see a fairy boat towards me, then I'll know it's a good day. He, like, sees it and then interprets it, rather than requesting a specific thing to happen.
We're going
to
see that opinion too, coming up. Yes. So, yes.
So, I don't know.
Good. Whatever Rav did was permitted, because Rav wouldn't be doing something that was not allowed. And I think Tosfot would say that really what Rav did and Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan, they didn't make decisions based on these signs that they had. They used the sign, and then they made decisions based on the information that they were given. Like Eliezer, who then went and asked the question. If he wouldn't have gone and asked the questions, that would have been forbidden. And actually, Tosfot points out, when Eliezer tells the story over the second time in Rivka's house, he says that he first asked the questions and then gave her the jewelry. Which some people learned that he was just changing it to make the story more believable, but Tosfot is learning that he told it that way because that's what really happened. And the way it's told the first time is not in the correct order. Since he first gave the bracelets and then he says whose family are you from, Tosfot says that you can't, there's no, Torah is not chronological necessarily. So he leaves in the wrong order and he first did his background checks and then he...
Wait, Tosfot says the Torah is not in chronological order?
Not necessarily chronological. When there's a reason to say it's not, then it's not.
So what?
The phrase in Hebrew is "Ein muktzim amulcha b'Torah." There's no prior and later in the Torah. In general, things are chronological unless for some reason they've changed around.
What would be the reason in this case for it to be braces first and then inquiry?
I could make something else if you want.
No, I'm just wondering. I'm just trying to make sense of it in my head. I'm confused because if the commentary that advocates for Eliezer says, well, he gave the bracelets after he got the confirmation, so I would just come and say, no, actually, he gave the bracelets beforehand.
No. The Torah says he gave
the bracelets. Oh, the Torah says, okay.
Right. The Torah says again. The Torah says the Torah.
And Torah says that it wasn't in that order.
There's two versions of the story. One time, when the Torah says what happened, he gave the bracelets first. When the Torah says that he told the story over, he gave the bracelets second.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them's not right.
Mm-hmm.
So do we say the first one's not the right order? Why is it that order? I don't know. It probably shows how much he trusted in God, even though he didn't really trust in God, or I don't know. According to, and Yonatan, same thing.
But in the Gemara and Tehillim, where they're actually saying that what Eliezer did was wrong, Tosfos is explaining what Eliezer did was
like wrong. Like Eliezer is wrong. I think the word is ke Eliezer, whatever, right? Is it?
Yeah,
like Eliezer. If you did it like Eliezer, if you did it like Eliezer, it's wrong, but what Eliezer did was okay.
Didn't do it like
right, he didn't do it like Eliezer either.
Yeah, okay.
Right, and Yonatan?
Like Yonatan ben Shaul, if you would ask, how could he practice divination? And we can answer that he only said it in order to encourage the youth he was with him, but he would have attacked them regardless.
But he wasn't looking for a sign of what to do, he was just looking for some encouragement. Right? If he says, oh, the Jews are coming, let's run away, then they're going to be able to chase after them, that would be a good sign. But he had already decided, he already made his decision, he wasn't relying on the sign to make a decision. Says Tosfot. Yeah. I mean, I think what Tosfot is saying is that a sign, you may use a sign if you don't rely on the sign. If you make your decision based on other factors, you can use the sign as a confirmation or encouragement.
Right, but then that begs the question. I mean, if Eliezer said, Hashem, give me a sign that X, and then Hashem gives a sign that X. So to demand confirmation of that sign when Akash Baruch Hu made it very clear that I'm lost, I guess.
I take your point.
Right.
In Ashkenaz, they didn't. Well, that wasn't their question over there.
Okay.
The risers would agree with you, I think, but we haven't got there yet.
Okay.
We'll get to Provence later.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Looking forward.
Rashi. Now, rule number one, well, probably rule number two. Rule number two in learning Gemara is that Rashi and Tosfot always argue. If Tosfot says something, he's coming to argue on Rashi. But having said that, I think Rashi is saying almost the same thing as Tosfot over here. At least this particular thing. Rashi explains,
even though they are not divination, it is forbidden to practice divination and to rely on divination.
Yeah, I think the key word in Rashi is to rely on it. Mm-hmm. It's forbidden to do it if you're going to rely on it. It's not forbidden if you're not going to rely on it.
Mm-hmm.
You flip a coin, I can't decide whether I'll flip a coin. If you flip the coin, it gives you the wrong answer. You say, I'll flip it again. Mm-hmm. Right? That's okay. Because you're not really relying on the coin, you're just using that to help you make a decision. But you know, you keep flipping to get the answer you really wanted in the first place. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But to flip the coin and actually make a decision based on that would seem to be forbidden according to Rashi and Tosfot.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So that is Ashkenaz, that's France and Germany. If we now move down to Spain, and the run through. See, these all these sources are all basically the same time period in round numbers. The run is 1320 to 1326, actually the latest from Catalonia, which was what we call Spain today. It was not Spain, it was different kingdoms, and France was not France, it was different areas and kingdoms. The Ran says something which is pretty similar to Tosfos and Rashi, but goes a step further. And I guess since the two of you have already said this idea, probably is the one that is most logical to us. Yanit, number eight.
This appears to me to be the explanation. Divination, which is forbidden by the Torah, means making something contingent on something which is not a logical cause or detriment, such as bread falling from his hand. These and all similar things are forbidden Amorite practices. But someone who makes as an omen something which is logical and shows benefit to the activity or harm, this is not divination. This is how the world works. A person says, if it rains tomorrow, I will not go on my journey, but if it does not rain, I will go. This is not divination, but the normal way of saying.
And then he goes on to say that Eliezer was looking for a wife, Yitzchak, who would be a Baalat Chesed. So he made a sign that involves chesed. And Yonatan was looking for how scared the Plishtim were, so he made a sign that would show whether they were scared or not. So he wasn't relying on a sign that was something random, something superstitious. He was using a sign that was connected to what he was doing. So you know, if the bus comes in the next 5 minutes, I'll go here. If it doesn't, I'll go there. That's use that makes sense. That's not a sign. That's just right. Helps you make a decision based on what's going on. So.
But then, could it be also a Shaul that you could say, well, he wanted Thomas to marry his daughter who was strong and could beat the Philistine?
He didn't use divination anyway. He just said, whoever does this can marry my daughter.
Oh.
It wasn't like God send me a son-in-law.
Uh-huh.
It was just here's the prize for beating Goliath is you can be a prince. Yonatan, it was. It's all sensible. I mean, it would make sense like that. So that's the run, which is really kind of Tosfot Rashi plus. Mm-hmm. You're not relying on the sign, you're relying on that because it makes sense as part of your decision-making process and it's connected to what you're doing. So as long as it's connected to what you are, to the decision you're making, it's totally fine. If it's something unconnected, a black cat crossed my path, so I can't go there today. It's Friday the 13th, it's going to be an unlucky day. Mm-hmm. Those things are forbidden according to the Rav. Right, my horoscope says that I'm going to have a bad day. That's forbidden according to the Rav. Right, to make a decision based on that. But if you, if the decision is connected, if the foretelling is connected to what you're looking for, then it makes, and it's permitted, and makes sense, and that's just called normal. What's actually interesting is that if you remember the Gemara on Sanhedrin, we'll see that what Eliezer did is not even included in the normative list of what's called divination or what's called nichush. The Gemara on Sanhedrin has an entirely different kind of list, which really fits more with what the Rav is saying than what Eliezer was doing.
Divination is someone who says, the bread fell out of my mouth, the stick fell from my hand, my son called after me, a raven crowed at me, a deer crossed my path, a snake crossed on my right, a fox passed me on the left. Do not start with me. It is the morning. It is Rosh Chodesh. It is Moshe Shabbat.
Right, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Yeah, yeah. The tax collectors come, and they go around knocking on doors to collect the money. So the guy said, I want to be the first one to give you the money. Go to someone else first and come back to me, because if I'm the first to get enough giving, I'll be the biggest giver. Or he says, I don't want to start the week paying out money. That's a bad way to start the week. Well, it's Rosh Chodesh, I'll start the month paying out money.
Oh, it's all related to money then.
Yeah, that's how Rashi understands it. So whatever, I don't want to do, it's the first of the, it's the beginning, a new beginning, I want to start with a...
Don't start with me.
Yeah, there's a comma there.
Yeah, footnote.
Yeah, they're reading fast. Sorry, okay. Yeah, Lee.
It was Scott. Divination or soothsaying. For example, like those who divine using animals, birds, or fish.
So according to this Gemara, it would seem that the prohibition of Nichush is really what we call superstition. A fox walked past me, a deer went in front of me, a snake walked past me, or that kind of black cat type thing. Or I want to start the first footing in Scotland. They go first footing on Hogmanay.
Sorry, say that again.
First footing
first on
Hogmanay
in
Scotland. They go first footing. New Year's Day, New Year's Night, whatever, New Year's Eve. The minhag is that someone you like comes to your house with a lump of coal and a piece of food. So you should have a warm year and plenty of food. And so first person into your house should be. That's this kind of superstition, which would seem to be forbidden. Right? I don't know. The first thing that I do should be whatever it is. So there's two kinds of, I guess they're similar. Some kind of external sign. Something happens to me, like, bad day is coming up, I better go back to bed.
I was just thinking about that. It's always tormenting. When I bed on Rosh Hashanah, I'm like, I should be in bed. It's going to be a sleepy year. It's horrible.
Good thing we're not superstitious, that's all I can say.
It's not helpful.
That's the part of the show I'm not going to say. I'll leave you to figure that out for yourself. Yeah. But yes, I mean, they ask this question on how do we have simanim on Rosh Hashanah, we eat all these different foods and say all these funny little things and whatever, and all things exactly like this. But it's permitted because we're Jewish and that's what we do, I think. I mean, there's no, I don't think there's any real difference, but That's our minhag, and that's what we do, so it's okay, and that's not, and so it's not. That's part two of the shift. So that's one kind of thing, or entrail weaving. It was a big business back in the time of the Romans. You don't know what to do, nowadays you use tea leaves, it's less bloody. But look in the tea leaves, read the tea leaves, you have tea bags, that doesn't work anyway, but read the tea leaves and you know what your future is going to hold. That would be divination, that would be forbidden.
Only if you were alive. Meaning that you can actually invite a group of friends over, read tea leaves.
And then ignore it.
And then ignore it.
Yeah, I'd like to see you do that, though. Not you, I mean anyone.
Wait, sleeping on Rosh Hashanah then is part of superstition, or?
It's what we do. It's what we don't do. I mean, not sleeping on Rosh Hashanah.
That's right.
It's what we do.
The minhag of not sleeping on Rosh Hashanah, does that come from superstition?
It goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu and therefore must be permitted.
Okay.
He says only slightly cynically.
Okay.
Good to know.
So basically,
you can sleep on
Rosh Hashanah. All right, none of those
are what Eliezer did. This is the Gemara that's talking about all the different kind of forbidden Amorite practices and witchcraft and those kinds of things. Here's the list, and Eliezer asking God for signs not on this list. So it seems that there's two different sugyas, two different ways of understanding what the prohibition is. And there's a machlokas rishonim as to whether we pass about the world calling or not. Rambam says we do. Rambam says in Mishnah Torah, in number 10. And you can pass it along when you get too long.
It is forbidden to use divination like we do, for it is written, nor shall you practice divination. Divination involves making statements like one is following. Since my bread has fallen from my mouth, or my stick has fallen from my hand, I will not go to such and such a place, for if I go, I will not be successful. Or, since a fox passed me on the right-hand side, I will not leave my house today. For if I do, I will meet a trickster, etc. Similarly, those who listen to the signing,
I think I tried to write that originally.
Similarly, those who listen to the singing of the birds and say things like, such and such will happen, and such will not, or it is good to do this, but bad to do that, etc., are also defined. Similarly, someone who says to slaughter a rooster that made a sound like a raven, or a hen that had made a sound like a rooster, is also
divining.
Similarly, one who makes signs for himself by saying that he will not act according to what he sees, like Eliezer, Avraham's servant, did, is also divining. All things similar to these are forbidden, and anyone who does any of them receives lashes.
Okay, stop there. Rambam seems to say the Gemara Sanhedrin, and adding a few extra bits to other places, and the Gemara Kulin, and stick them all together. And
you said what I meant, that it is
also forbidden. Everything's forbidden. You can't rely on the sign, you can't ask for a sign, you can't do any kind of sign is forbidden, says Rambam. And also, he also seems to leave out Yonatan from his list of what he's going to sign. So the question is why he left out Yonatan. The simple answer would be that his Gemara didn't have Yonatan Ben Shaul in it, which is reasonable. Or it could be that, like we're going to see later on, that perhaps what Yonatan did can be explained that it wasn't really dividing. But he'll give a similar answer to Tosfot in terms of Yonatan. That what he did was, he was going to do it anyway, but he asked God for a sign to encourage him and help him to do it. Perhaps Rambam means that. More likely, I think, that he just didn't have that in his Gemara. How can he say that Eliezer did a sin? Well, I mean, perhaps the Gemara entirely implies that Eliezer did a sin, or you can say that he wasn't Jewish, or that he was... I don't know. I don't know how he can say it, but he seems to say that what Eliezer did was the wrong thing to do. You don't have to ask for a sign, not allowed to write things of the past, or the future, or anything at all. However, you are allowed to do the following. Next paragraph.
It is permitted to make statements like, this house that I built is a good sign for me, or the woman that I married, or the animal that I purchased is blessed. Once I married her or purchased this, I became rich. Or to ask a child to recite a verse, and to declare the child's reading of a verse from the blessings is a good sign. these statements are permitted because they're making them. One is not decided to force action or refrain from doing something. One is if accepted whatever it is as a good sign for what has already happened.
So this is really peculiar, and I can't figure it out, and neither can the case of Mishnah. Rambam says that what is permitted is to work out what happened in the past, using some kind of, not only, he would say this is not, this is just clarification of events that have happened, but not making decisions for the prohibition for Rambam is making a decision for the future based on something that happened. Right. But to say, well, that was lucky, I'll try it again, or whatever, is okay. What's the problem with that? What Rabbi Yochanan did, he cancelled his train tickets and he unpacked the suitcase because of what the kid told him to do. So it seems though he did make a decision based on the future, based on what the... So the Kesef Mishnah says that he didn't make a decision based on... He didn't make a decision for the future based on what this kid said. He just understood a reality. Shmuel's no longer alive. Mm-hmm. That was a past reality. I know it wasn't correct, and it's not really a good answer. I guess the Mishnah says it's not really a very good answer, as well. He rejects that answer, because in fact he did make a decision for the future. So it's really hard to understand what Rambam means by this, just how that works. But he's clear about what he means. It just doesn't seem to add up. So if you want to know what happened in the past, you can use whatever. Well, you've got a limited choice, but you can use certain kinds of things to know what happened in the past. And that's not called divining, because divining means trying to work out the future. But to ask for any kind of sign or to interpret something as a sign for the future is forbidden. Yeah, okay, good. So that Rambam is Cordova, Spain, Egypt, Israel, Egypt, and kind of unique in that.
Advertising to my name for Mashiach, is that a totally different topic?
I don't know what you're...
If someone says, like, I am Mashiach, and I'll prove it to you because I can do this and this, you're not supposed to believe this, I'm just like...
So that's in terms of how do you know who's a prophet?
Yeah. Prophet, sorry.
Right, who's a prophet, who's not a prophet. No, he brings it in Hilchot Mashiach.
That's it, okay.
It's the same, it is, you need a prophet to declare he's going to be Mashiach, and it's all the same thing, and it's not really the topic. So. Okay. But it is, hopefully will be another topic coming up soon. There is a thing called Garam Hagra. I don't know if you've heard of this. I don't know why it's called, I don't know, but when I researched the internet, they didn't know either why it's called Garal Hagra. Garal is the only gun, and the Garal is a lottery of the only gun. But it existed, it was not invented by the only gun, so it just seems to have adopted that name. And that seems to be looking in a book one version is to determine the past, and one version of the story is to determine the future. There's a famous story about Bishop Zion, about the Lamed Hay.
Oh, yeah.
It is right. Yes. Familiar with this story?
Which one?
In
1948.
Oh, Lamed Hay.
They didn't know
that. They didn't know. There were 12, there were 35 soldiers who were trying to capture Gush, and they were ambushed and killed and buried. And then after the state, it was just before the state, the ceasefire, and they had these graves, and there were 12 of the bodies they couldn't identify. And so they asked Rav Arya Levin, and he did Garav Hagra to try and work out. There's a whole list of what you have to say. So the Hillel first, and the prayers, and ask specifically what you want, and then you open a Tanakh, and on that page we'll tell you the answer of what you're looking for. So,
I didn't know that part of the story.
Yeah, that's the interesting bit. So, I don't know if it's nice, I think it's right. So there were these 12 bodies they couldn't identify. They knew what the names, they knew what the choices were of what names they could be. They didn't know which they went with which body. So Rav Arya Levin wanted to identify which grave held the remains of Benjamin Bogolevsky. And he opened the Tanakh to the words, "Umate Benjamin Begorav," the tribe of Benjamin by a lottery, which kind of freaked me out if that happened. And then the grave of Eliyahu Hershkowitz was revealed through the words, "Veikach Eliyahu et Hayalad." Eliyahu took the child. So he did this and identified these 12 things, and that's primitive. It's not telling the future, and it's not making decisions based on that, and that's all. I mean, I think that's so. We're just gonna, don't try this one at home.
Well, wait, Darren, so he opens Tanakh and he.
And he found a puzzle that was exactly relevant to the names that.
Of all the names of the 12 titles.
Open the 12
titles. Oh, okay. No,
open the 12 titles.
I didn't send out 12 names for even one puzzle.
Sorry, he opened, went to one body, opened it, and there was a name that was relevant to
that. That is insane.
Name. And then the next one, and then the next one. So that.
They don't teach that in the story of the Holiday.
They should. You got the wrong storybook.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they teach them the Ariel Levine storybook instead.
Yeah.
So that would be even. I mean, according. I'm not sure according to. According to Rambam, that would be fine because you're trying to work out something in the past. When there's no other way of doing it, you're trying to find the information rather than trying to predict what to do for the future. Now, I don't know according to Tosa, Rashi, and the Ram whether that's called permissible or not. You're not making a decision based on it.
Well, you are, kind of. You're saying this is going to be...
We're going to put a name space here. But, I mean, maybe. I'm not sure it's really a decision of the future. But the story which is a bit more problematic is the story of Aaron Butler. Of Aaron was in Shanghai before the war, when I got to Shanghai, I think. Was it after the war? I don't remember.
Before the war.
He was there before the war?
Didn't he bring...
He was not... I don't know. I don't think he was in the year.
Okay, so I don't know.
I don't know why he was in Shanghai, but according to this version of the story, he was in Shanghai. And he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, which back then was called Palestine. But Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was in America, had written him a letter saying, please come to America, I need some help in America. So he wasn't sure what to do, so he opened a Tanakh, and he opened it on the verse that said, V'yom Hashem el Aaron lech el Moshe. Lech Amidbar El Moshe, right? When Moshe comes back to the burning bush, God says to Aaron, go and meet Moshe in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
So he understood that his name was Aaron, and he had to go to Moshe, who's in the desert, which is America. And so he moved to...
I like that. No, because it's what we do call
it. Well, it was back
then. Spiritual desert, that's what it is.
It really was back then. So there, he seemed to make a decision for the future based on what he read in the book. So I can explain according to the run that he really knew what he wanted to do. He just opened to get slipping through if he found the right pasuk, or according to Tosfot, he didn't rely on it solely. But according to Rambam, I don't really understand how that is permitted in the Rambam system. But then I don't understand Rabbi Yochanan how that was permitted either in the Rambam system. So I'm not asking a question of Aaron, I'm just trying to understand how the... Yeah, okay. The Mitzvah Tone is even an art scroll book, so it must be true. So again, just to, in terms of what is permitted divination and what is not, Tosfot and Rashi say that if you don't rely on this completely, but you just use it in addition to other things, there's no prohibition at all. The Ran says that if your find is somehow connected to what you're trying, the decision you're trying to make, there's no problem with that at all. Rambam says that everything is forbidden if you're trying to predict the future. You can't ask God for a sign for the future. You can't rely on something you saw for the future. But if it's something in the past, then you can use limited choice of signs just to work out what happened in the past. So we've gone from Europe to Northern Europe to Spain to Israel, and then we come to Provence, the Jews of Provence were the Minhagim of the Jews of Provence disappeared when the Talmidim of the Ramban started moving north into Europe. The Meiri was one of the last Provençal rabbis. He wrote a book called Magen Avot to try and list the Minhagim of Provence, kind of as a museum piece. He saw that the Minhagim were dying out because the Spaniards were moving in and taking over their thing. But Provence was a place where many of the Rishonim came from. Baal HaMa'or, who was Rachia HaLevi, the Radak, who wrote on Tanakh, the Nabi, the Meiri, and the Ravid, who wrote critiques of the Rambam, all top Rishonim, and all from Provence. And all four of them, even though I didn't have two of them, my wife thinks I've got too many books, but I haven't got enough because there's two books I didn't have and couldn't quite resource stuff, so you have to trust me on that. But all four of them have an entirely different approach to this whole sugya than everyone else has seen. They all have a similar approach to each other. So let's look at the Ravid. As you know, the Ravid attacks Rambam. When the Rambam says something he doesn't like, he is not shy with attacking the Rambam. And if you ever need a good rabbinic insult, just flick through the Rambam and see what the Ravid says, and you'll have a good. But I don't remember him ever saying anything as severe as he says on this particular issue, where the Rambam says that what Eliezer did is a problem of divination. He says, number 11.
This is a big mistake.
So he's what Rambam wrote. Rambam says what Eliezer did is forbidden. Asking for a sign is forbidden. Shibush gadol. I can't even translate it strong enough. Yeah.
So this is permitted, and permitted it is. Perhaps he was misled by the wording that says any divination which is not like Eliezer and Yonatan is not divination. He thought it was saying that it is forbidden, but this is not correct. Rather, this is what it means. It is not worth relying on. How could Rambam have thought such a sentence anything like that? If they were here, he would have put a pulsed dinura. They would have put a pulsed dinura.
No, pulsed dinura is? Pulsed dinura is a curse that you can put on somebody and they'll drop dead.
Whoa.
Which, it can backfire. It's a dangerous thing to do, but it literally means lashes of fire, whipping somebody with fire. And there have been a few famous times in recent history where people put a pulsa denua on somebody and some of them died.
Who? What?
So many minutes in history. How are we talking about?
Yeah, how recent is this?
Rabin and Sharon. He's not dead.
What?
Anyway.
Who did you say cursed
him out? Look at Wikipedia.
Okay, sorry.
Anyway, Ravid is saying that what Rambam writes here is completely out of line, out of any, and you know, he's saying things about tzaddikim that you're not allowed to say, saying that they're doing something wrong, they clearly would. And he learned the Gemara exactly the opposite. The way I learned the Gemara, the way I said the Gemara, was that Rav is saying that only those kinds of, only Elias and Yonatan is what's forbidden, but everything else is okay. What the Ravid is saying is, only those ones, the ones you can rely on. Only what aliens are doing the answer are the ones that you should rely on. So asking God for a sign, I'm going to embellish what he says based on what the Radak says. But the Ravid is saying that you can ask God for signs because God directs the world. And it's like you were saying, Yoni, that if you want God in your life, you say, well, God, help me out. If you want me to do this, then give me a sign that's the right thing to do. And then I'll be able to have guidance. Since God guides the world, directs the world, then not only may we, but it's a good thing to ask God for help in every endeavor that we do and ask him to give us a sign that we're doing the right thing. So it's exactly, Rambam says you can never ask anything for the future, only for the past. Ravid says you should ask for things in the future. Mm-hmm. So it comes out exactly the opposite. The Radak, commenting on the verse of Yonatan asking things, says exactly the same thing. You need.
Remain until they reach us. This means wait. Yonatan said this as a sign and an omen. But this, and things like it, are voices that a person hears and he strengthens his heart because they are a sign and an omen for the action. Do not be mistaken because of the words of our rabbis. Rav said, any divination that is not like Eliezer, Avraham's servant, or like Yonatan ben Shaul is not divination. This does not mean that it is forbidden, as many have explained. Divination involves using animals or birds and is not similar to the divination of Eliezer or Yonatan. Only that kind is forbidden.
Meaning the entrails is forbidden. That's the problem.
Using animals and birds.
Yeah.
What?
Animals and birds is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But Eliezer and Yonatan is what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's permitted.
Okay. Only that kind is forbidden. As the rabbis have said, those things and similar.
Meaning the entrails and the fox and the black cat and all that kind of stuff. Those things are.
Have been made up by people with evil thoughts and have become fixed as a custom for them. They think that they have the power to do good or bad, and this is what the Torah forbids. But if a person wants to do something that makes a sign or strengthen their resolve or to awaken them to do this, this is permitted. If Eliezer and Yonatan were doing something wrong, God would not have answered them and helped them in their tasks. The statement of Rav means that any divination or omen that the person did not make for himself beforehand, like Eliezer and Yonatan did, is not divination or an omen and cannot be relied upon or concerned with if it happens by itself. Our rabbi said, from here we learn that we may use a bat kol. Your ears will hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it.
It's a common thing. You know, yeah.
They said that it sounds like the voice of a man in the city and the voice of a woman in the field. What can we say after the stories of Talmud, which are based in verses? We see that exactly as Jonathan did was told to Gideon prophetically, listen to what they would say, and then your hand will grow strong.
So he's saying that a superstition like a black cat and walking under a ladder and finding the 13th, those things are forbidden because they are the Amorite practices. Those are made up by non-Jews that may have some kind of forbidden connection. He says people, people with evil thoughts, mm-hmm. and became fixed as custom. Since we don't know the reason for, keep away from them because they're not what we do. But to ask God for a sign to help you with something, or to encourage you, right, is absolutely permitted. And it's a good thing to do. And so according to this, I understand Rosh Hashanah, the Minhagim, all that kind of stuff is makes no sense.
Not halakha, but
certainly what I should do. God, if you want me to go and do this mitzvah, then I need the bus right now, please. Mm-hmm. And if the bus comes, then that's God's mm-hmm. thing. Go, and if not, then not. If something happens without you asking for it, you can't rely on it. If you ask God for a sign and then you get a sign, you can't. You
really? Wait, that's what the Radak is saying.
That's what the Radak is saying. That's what the Rivet is saying. That's what the Miri and the Balamor say as well. Which,
something happens. You ask for a sign. You shouldn't take it as a sign.
Right. You can't say, "Oh, I dropped my bread, and therefore it's gonna be a bad."
You lost your key. You're looking for it, and you're gonna be running late to work. You shouldn't take that as a sign. You ask beforehand for Hashem to make you lose your key.
You didn't ask. Right,
you didn't ask.
Right. But if you say, God, if you want me to get to work on time, help me find my keys really quickly, and he does, and that's it. I'm not sure.
So not retrospectively, but only looking forward, would it count as a sign?
Yeah. The opposite of the Rambam.
The Rambam
is forbidden to ask for signs of the future.
Right.
And the Rambam says it's forbidden to rely on something that he didn't ask for. And he brings the proof by ducks, because it brings proof from the Batkot. What's a bat called? A bat called the voice from heaven. But says the Radak, if you're in the city, it sounds like a man. If you're in the field, it sounds like a woman. Because it's really, I think what he's saying is it's just the voice of somebody. You're overhearing somebody, but it's relevant to what you... You ask God such and such. You overhear somebody saying something which is an answer to your question.
Yeah.
Right. It means it's from heaven, but not from heaven. It's from through someone else's mouth. And that's permitted. I don't know if he says it's encouraged necessarily, but I get the impression that it's to strengthen your resolve or a good thing. Now, I can't figure out how he learns the Gemara. That's the truth. I don't know how to learn the whole Gemara with Rav Hamchulin, either according to the Ravid or the Radak. The truth is the Ran also says that it's very difficult to understand, so I'm in good company for not understanding it. But it's clear what his opinion is over here. That if you live in Provence, you should be asking God for signs, and you should rely on the signs that God sends you.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in Spain, Egypt, you should not trust anything, not rely on any signs for the future.
Mm-hmm.
You may rely on certain kinds of signs to work out what happened in the past. If you live in Catalonia,
right.
You can rely on a sign if it's connected, if it's helping you in your decision-making process, and it's logical, it makes sense, the sign will be connected. And if you live in Germany or France, then you can never rely on a sign completely, but you can use it to help you make a decision if you're kind of half and half and using it as an extra step in the right way.
Why did
we
do that?
Why did we do what? You see, that would have been a really good shift if I could have figured that out.
Is it expressed itself in the community?
Yeah?
Are there any guesses, assumptions,
yes, but I don't know whether that's heretical. Well, it's not heretical. It might be heretical. I don't want to say it. And I don't know if it's true in this case. Are people influenced by the environment in which they live? Yes, Rambam says that people are influenced by where they live. Can rabbis be influenced by where they live? Don't know. Depends who you speak to. Maybe rabbis are immune from any kind of influence. But if you could show me that people in Provence were very big into believing in the signs of the future and people in Catalonia were not into that, then I would tell you that's a very serious option, but I didn't. I don't even know how to go about finding that out in a way that would be meaningful.
So,
when we say looking
at Israel,
right?
You know, the halakha and the baisa.
Yeah.
That's what Shulchan Aruch is for.
I'm kidding.
Kuf Ayin Tet, the eighth Dalit is where this is discussed, in the Yodeh, in the Shulchan Aruch. And I looked at yesterday and I forgot to say what it says. It's the easy answer.
Okay.
So, not a big indecision. The answer is basically don't rely on signs. But I can't remember exactly which of the four it adds up to.
So how are we meant to reconcile all these various things? I mean, are we, where do we stand when it comes to it? Like, halachically, I mean, how would we decide about signs for ourselves in our lives? Practical application.
Then you're talking about
Okay.
You go to Halacha Shin, the Parsha Shin.
Okay. Can you give us the answer next time?
Don't rely on signs.
Don't rely on signs. Okay.
But I kind of tend to go with Rambam on those things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We are very superstitious. There are many things that people do that seem superstitious, some more than others, some less than others. Some more Jewish and some more obviously taken from non-Jewish societies. Okay, the signs of Rosh Hashanah is something that we do, but we don't really believe in it all that much, so I think that's probably quite all right. Although not everyone agrees that you should do that. You see a nun walk past you, you should spit, I think it's probably not, well, I wouldn't recommend that practice personally. I know people are very, if you pour the water from the back of your hand to the front of your hand, people get very upset by that. I don't know of any Jewish source for that, but it's a very widespread American, North American, you know, if you pour someone a drink.
Instead of holding it like this, if you pour it like this, because it's how the
Kavar Kedisha.
But
they don't.
They don't do it like that?
I'm a Kohen, so I've never seen it, but my understanding is they don't pour like that for the dead.
Okay.
And if they do, it's probably only because of this midnight, not because there's no halakha there, sign by this. Or to not sit on the floor because of the sign in mourning, or to not, all those things.
What about taking your bed up with your feet to the door?
Yeah.
I always think about that.
People don't want to stay with their feet towards the door.
Is there a source for that?
I think there is. I mean, well, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty sure there is because that's the way we learned it. Tying your shoe in a certain way.
But that's not superstition. That's a halacha. No, so that's not because it's a sign or a portent. That's because you always do the right first, except that when you put on tefillin, you don't have the left arm, so you tie the left shoe first.
That's the reason?
You put on your right shoe first, and then your left shoe second. You tie your left shoe first, and your right shoe second.
Why? You put your right shoe on first, not your left shoe first.
Because you always lead with the right.
Why?
Because the right is correct, the right is stronger, right is chesed, right is chesed.
Right is
chesed. I don't know if those are that's a halakha of how to do things.
Yeah, but
it's not predicting the future using that.
Here's one. Shindalid. I mean, the fact that you have to keep your onions and you cut your onions and you.
That's like Gemara and Nida.
What?
Cut onion.
Cut onion.
Yeah, it's a Gemara.
In the you can't keep it open. You have to put olive. You have to put oil on it so that.
If it's in the Gemara, the Gemara says. Someone who does this, Mitchai Benafsha, Dama Barosha, you know, I mean, I don't know whether that was a logical thing back then or a spiritual thing back then, but by me, if it says in the Gemara, then you do it. And that's not called superstition, that's called. It's not brought down the
Shulchan
Aruch. It's not.
I mean, it's halakha, but it could technically stem from superstition.
But it's from the Gemara.
So it's just.
I trust the Gemara.
Right.
So that's my.
Right.
If it isn't the Gemara, if it isn't the Shulchan Aruch, if it isn't the Rambam, then I'll go with it. Right. Any Rishon who says this is what you should do, I'll go with that.
Right.
But something which we don't know what the things that are really problematic, things we don't know what the source of them is. We don't know. It's not a reason. Doesn't make sense. Reason like logically, and it's something which doesn't have a source that we can trace.
Right.
So I think we should be worried that it might be a non-Jewish custom.
Right.
that we've adopted or idolatrous custom that we've adopted.
Definitely
out. Even as a joke, I think they're forbidden to look at, but I'm a bit extreme on that.
And when people say, like, you should hold the Hatzalah candle that high, because that's how I'll call your husband. Yeah. Please leave me alone.
You can just punch them, I think.
Yeah. No, astrology-wise, there's definitely a makor for astrology.
There is, but it's not what you read in the news on Sunday.
Right, not what you read in the news on Sunday, but where the stars are in the sky, and then that whole rising sun thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't understand it, but...
And dreams and whatever. There are things which we consider, again, without ignoring all of the things we just said, there are things which are considered a minor prophecy, mm-hmm. which you can. Dreams are interesting because that's a mission to what dreams different times. There's three different approaches to what dreams in the Gemara. But there are some things which seem to be, we seem to give weight to. But I'd like to see a source of them before I take any of them on.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's a custom of Les Poring to get rid of Ayin Hara.
Yeah.
You've heard of this one.
Sure. Yeah.
Les Poring. There's a woman in Meshach with a Hechsher from this rabbi and that rabbi, and she's the one, she's got it from her ancestors, and she knows what to do. You heat up lead, and you pour it into a bucket of cold water, and it forms eye shape, teardrop shape,
mm-hmm.
eye shape. And then she tells you to get rid of all your Ayin Haras. And I know people have gone there and who say it definitely works, and they should, you know, apparently supposed to go every 70 months to get it renewed because it's getting newer. If you just do a quick search on the internet, you'll see this was a German custom in the 1800s on New Year's Day. They would pour lead into water and look to the different shapes and check what was going to happen in the coming year.
But there are good elements say that support what
there are. So I've got to be very careful saying against this, but. You can go on Amazon and you can buy yourself a lead pouring kit that just puts some sense to your German name and with instructions of how to predict what's going to happen based on this.
Yeah. Well, she's not predicting anything based on shapes.
No, I know.
What she does is just pour it until it, I mean, I know, but
I don't believe that any Jewish source are doing lead pouring.
No, not the Jewish source of lead pouring, but the
she's not predicting the future.
She's not predicting the future. She's relieving that person of Ayin Hara.
I can understand psychologically why it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see why Ayin Hara would bother following an old German custom.
No, but we do believe Ayin Hara is a real thing, and it's the source of Fundy.
Okay.
Find me a source that says you can get rid of it.
Yeah.
There's a source in the Gemara about protecting yourself from Ayin Hara, but not getting rid of it.
Most of those, and some of those things we do, most of them we don't do.
So,
but if it's in the Gemara, I'll go with it. If it's in the Rishonim, I'll go with it. But if it doesn't have a source, I'm nervous to say, like, I don't know where it's from, it doesn't make sense to me. So I would be very nervous about following it or doing it.
Even though she's not predicting the future, she's essentially getting rid of, she's reading that person.
I think the reason she got hetero is because she doesn't need to predict the future.
Right.
There are less... honest, no, that's the wrong word, but less scrupulous people who do make predictions. I had someone come to me once and say, you know, that she was in a certain place, there's this lead pouring, and the guy who did it says there's going to be this, that, and the other in the future for you, and whatever, and that freaked you out a lot. And understandably so. And I think, I don't see any hesitation doing such a thing. Or a red string around your wrist, and it's going to have some powers for you, or do something for you, or drink Chaim Kanievsky's leftover wine, and it's going to be, or drink the Rebbe's mikvah water, or I don't know, whatever the different minhag. I don't. If there's no basis for such a thing, I mean, okay, whatever. I'll begin my say, but even 40 days at the kotel, saying what it is, say Mishma 40 days at the kotel.
Right.
Who made that up? If you go to Amukah, you're going to find your shidduch. I mean, that's not exactly what we're talking about. It's a different kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But where's the source that says that?
Right.
Yeah, Mulcah, if you look in Making of the God, which of course is banned, if you look in Making of the God, he's found that the whole cost of going to Mulcah was, I think, invented in 1953 by the tourism company.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Is buried there, and you go there and you'll meet your shidduch, it's guaranteed. So the tourist board.
You know that?
Yeah. Yeah. So okay. I mean, what's wrong with going to visit grave of somebody? But if you actually think it's going to have a power over you to do something, then I think that's taken away from your belief in God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's potentially very dangerous.
There's a lot of verbatim who are proposing.
And even more so, because a lot of people are very into believing, the more crazy things are, the more likely they are to believe them. I think it's very important that we should know the difference between what's a halacha, what's an accepted minhag, and what's not an accepted minhag, and what's the recent thing which may, in fact, not have a holy thought.
I understand that Rav Kaduri said that there's no reason anybody should have to leave Eretz Yisrael ever, with one exception, and that's going to Uman.
I'll bet it was a Breslau retelling that he said that.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
It was a Breslau retelling. How did he know that?
It wasn't Rav Avinia, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's just that there's no catch to leave your wife and kids and go to Oman and Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
There's a halakha, and there's a thing. If you're a follower, if you're a chassan, you follow your Rebbe, and your Rebbe says do this, so you do that. You don't ask any questions, because that's what you're doing. That's what being a chassan is, unquestioningly following your Rebbe. And I get that. I have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not a chassan, you don't take all this sitting minhagim, or minhagim which has no basis or whatever. I think... Again, this is a very, there is a whole lot of halacha about different kinds of omens and signs and fortune telling and magic and witchcraft and which is permitted and what's forbidden. And this is just one small topic about whether you have to ask God for a sign or not. And either you are or you aren't.
We didn't talk about Chonin Maga.
He was nothing for a sign.
When he was creating, well,
the circle.
Yeah, the question is that like sorcery or?
Okay.
I'm asking a question, I don't know.
He should have been put in cherem for it as well, according to the Gemara.
Mm.
Except that he got away with it because he was choni. I should mention that says, if it wasn't that you were choni, I would have put you in cherem because you believe people didn't doubt God, basically. But yes, I don't know what he did exactly, but there is a lot on all sorts of things which are problematic. But there's just one thing we see. Eliezer went and asked for a sign, and we have a whole range of opinions, and I accept that there are many opinions.
So what would you recommend we should do? Yeah, it sounds like Catholic. Scares me, Rabbi Stanley. What am I supposed
to do? Use your brain and think, and don't rely on signs. In a bit, I'm going to finish.
All right. Good.